More information at denjustpeace.org.
Support comes from Ozo Coffee with locations in Boulder and Longmont. Ozo Coffee is roasted weekly in Boulder and sourced through long-term partnerships with smallholder farmers and cooperatives. Ozo offers whole bean and subscription options for home brewing. More information at ozocoffee.com.
Well, welcome to Hemispheres. I'm your host, Hepburn. Tonight we have a special guest, John Fairweather, one of the lead activists for the Airport to Park movement out in Santa Monica, California. And they were able to take control of their airport by wresting it away from the grips of the FAA and the pilot lobbies. And welcome, John, to Hemispheres.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out with the history. When did you get involved and why did you get involved?
I got involved in the late 2000s, and why was because my wife told me we had to sell the house and go somewhere else because the noise was driving her crazy. So I said, well, give me a couple of months to see what's going on and I'll see what I can do. And so it's a decade and a half or so later. I'm a bit behind schedule, but we're getting there.
So at that time when you get involved, was the airport still under the grant assurances controlled by the FAA?
Yes, it was.
And so how did you find out about what you had to do? What type of research or information did you get?
Well, at that time, it was very difficult to get any information. The airport was kind of a mystery. And so we first started out by finding out who was flying and where what they were doing by manually logging flights and reading the tail numbers. And just figuring that out. And then we started the process of educating the city council about what was going on, which in our case was about 60 to 70% of the flights were patent flying for flight schools. And so that's really where it started. And the fight with the FAA had been going on since 1984 went through various stages, all of which I was oblivious to until 2000 or so when I got involved. And at that stage, there'd been an awful lot of litigation backwards and forwards and not a whole lot of progress in getting anything resolved.
So when you said that you're I forgot to mention that Western Skyhiker is here in the studio with me for question support. So when you said your wife was reaching her limit, had there been a change in the flights patterns or usage?
Yes, there had been a huge increase in flight school. At that time, I think Santa Monica Airport had six or more flight schools. There'd been a big increase. And so patent flying was pretty much continuous, which is what had triggered the issue. And so the first thing was to identify who was doing all this patent flying, and that all turned out to be the various flight schools. And so it was a learning process for the first few years, but it was definitely the change in the traffic that triggered my involvement. As I said, involuntarily, because I usually just go about my own thing, but this was a little too much to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, once you get aware of it, then you can't get away from it.
Yeah.
And At that point, did you reach out to the FAA to try to get some relief from the pattern flying?
No, all of the dealing with the FAA was by the city. The city had been engaged in a fight with the FAA to reclaim the land that was the airport. Originally, the land where Santa Monica Airport is was originally a park, Great Park. It was purchased in the 1920s, and it was turned into the airport during World War II when Douglas Aircraft used it to manufacture for the war effort. And then when it was given back to Santa Monica, it was put under all these encumbrances, and that's when the fight really started.
And at what point did you realize that, it was the FAA money that was sort of the linchpin holding the city back and making your wife unhappy?
Well, I'm not sure that the two are directly related. It was the noise that was making the... The significance of the money became clear when we realized that the city was actually losing money quite substantially. And by that time, had built up about, I think, a $13 million indebtedness to the city's general fund to subsidize aviation operations. And then, so the question was, well, why? And we started looking at the causes for that, and that turned up that the aviation businesses were paying, because of the 84 agreement, were paying rents that hadn't really substantially increased since 1984 and were extremely low, and far below standard market rate for a normal commercial use of the space, even, you know, hangar space. And so we started looking into the finances, and after a while, the city started looking into the finances too, and they hired a expert in aviation field to evaluate what the fair landing fee rate would be, and that turned out to be a lot more. So I think in about 2015, the city actually put those rates into effect, and A, for the landing fees, and B, for the rental, property rental for the aviation businesses and the FAA has to agree with that. They can't force a city to lose money. So they said, okay, well, you can increase those two things in order to become financially viable.
Was there, did the FAA sort of like threaten or try to strong arm the city or the movement to take back the airport in terms of these fees? What type of strong arming did you guys get, if any?
Well, the strong arming wasn't by the FAA. The strong arming was mostly by the aviation lobby, because they had decided that the line in the sand as far as airport closures was going to be drawn right through the middle of Santa Monica Airport. So that sort of put the national aviation lobby directly in conflict with the people of Santa Monica. So the FAA was not engaged actively in fighting anything with us at that stage. It was still going through the preliminary stages.
What type of involvement was the AOPA at this early stage of the trying to reduce the deficit? What was their stance?
Well, they brought a number of Part 16 procedures to try to reverse the increase in fees, and they were litigated and eventually thrown out, and the fees were increased.
So you had a $13 million deficit, and that was recognized at the late 90s or the early 2000s. Is that when it was recognized?
Early 2000s.
And then it was the city then trying to implement landing fees took till 2015. Was there internal resistance in the city to the landing fee increases?
There was a lot of education we had to go through, because as I said, the airport was a kind of mystery even to city council at the time. And so we had to do a lot of educating about what was going on, what the finances were, because they weren't getting that. So there was a lot of time taken just educating what the situation is, what the possibilities were, what their rights were, to the point where, you know, the city began actively doing things about it. So, and also that there was a big increase in the opposition in the community over that period. So it became something that could no longer be ignored.
As you started to organize, what was your kind of primary organizing goal when you first started out?
When I first started out, I just wanted to get something done about the pattern flying, but the intransigence of the people that were engaged in it made it very obvious that it couldn't just be resolved at that level. It had to be brought higher up. So that's when we began to talk about shortening the runway. And the runway in Santa Monica was made up of a number of parcels, and one of those parcels, called the Western Parcel, was never subject to the grant assurances. It was city parcel, and so the proposal was, well, let's just close the Western Parcel. That'll take 1,500 feet off the runway, or more. 2000 maybe, and then they won't be able to fly the jets, which were a major part of the problem by that time. The jet traffic had increased dramatically as well, and so that triggered a sequence of litigation between the city and the FAA about the right to do that, which ultimately the city was winning in the court, because the FAA had no right over that parcel. And the city, the FAA and the city started. The city and the FAA the next stage was that the AOPA and the National Business NBAA, since it looked like the city would win that litigation, they tried to put a ballot measure on. Well, they did put a ballot measure on the city to take all control of the airport away from the city. That was basically what the ballot measure was to do, and keep it open forever. And so that's when we became very actively involved in opposing that. And we defeated that by a substantial margin, despite huge spending by the National Aviation Lobby to get it through. And that, in addition with everything else, ultimately triggered what was called a consent agreement, where the FAA and the city agreed that the city would have the right to close at the end of 2028, and the FAA and the city would both defend that right against all comers. And that's been the situation since. And there have been plenty of comers that have tried to invalidate that consent decree, but they've all been eventually defeated in court. So as of now, the airport in 2017, the city officially declared it was going to close it at the end of 2028, and that is what is going to happen.
So one of the, I'll call it a technique. One of the techniques that's here in Boulder is to spread the story that the FAA granted the right for Santa Monica to close, and that there wasn't a struggle, but the FAA allowed Santa Monica to close to reduce congestion in the area because of LAX up the road, Hawthorne. Other airports in the area. Is there any truth to that claim?
There's no truth to that. The FAA granted the right because they were about to lose in court, and they did not want to set a precedent of losing in court, because they don't usually do that. And so that's why the consent decree.
Which court was that going to be heard in? Was that like county court or city court?
No, that was something circuit.
Oh, okay, like a federal.
I don't
Yeah.
remember the exact details.
Yeah, a few years ago, a woman here in Longmont was being targeted by the airplanes out of Longmont, and she tried to go through the FAA to fight it. And she ended up getting a administrative judge from the FAA, and the even though she had all this video and audio and affidavit whistleblower information, the FAA administrative judge came up to her house, looked up in the sky, and said, "Well, I don't see any airplanes. Case dismissed. And you got to pay the legal fees for these other people." I mean, is that the type of thing that
That's
the
what that was. The thing is that the FAA control, through its own internal legal processes, the judge, jury, and executioner of all things to do with aviation. So
questions.
it's very difficult to win by dealing with the FAA. You have to go outside of that in order to make much headway.
Let's see. So this Thursday, City Council is going to meet and discuss whether to take FAA money. And unfortunately, a lot of the factual information around the airport has been kind of skewered, and there's been some major gaps and omissions in, for instance, on the money. That the FAA, for instance, exaggerating the cost to keep it open. What did you kind of run into that same thing with the lobbies for the airport trying to influence the city of Santa Monica?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a strong push to just keep it going and take the money from the FAA. But the problem with that is that In effect, the airport is kind of like a black hole. You can put money into it, and you do have to put money into it, but none ever comes back out across the event horizon. And every time you take money and let the black hole grow, you're stuck with 20 more years of the black hole. What the city very wisely realized was that they could stop the losses by increasing the fees, which the FAA would have to agree and did. And then that as a result, there was a lot of departures in the aviation businesses in Santa Monica Airport. The airport shrunk quite substantially, particularly after the runway was shortened. And as a consequence, there was a lot of buildings there that could be leased out for commercial uses. And so they were at commercial market rates, not at aviation market rates. And as a result, the city then started making money and paying off the debt. And right now, I think it's making money at the rate of about $8 million excess each year. But that is all being made by from non-aviation revenues. It has nothing to do with aviation. In fact, the aviation part of the airport is probably losing money again because there was a Part 16 not so long ago where they had to reduce the fees and everything again because the city was making so much money, was making a profit, and someone brought us Part 16 saying you can't make a profit, you have to reduce the fees. And so they did. The problem with getting this money from non-aviation uses is again, it's the other side of the event horizon. As far as the city is concerned, it can get no benefit from it. So what, in the case of Santa Monica, the area of the airport, that Santa Monica is very tightly bounded by surrounding cities. And so there is no spare room. And the airport is about 4.5% of the total city area. And so the city is in a state where it gets nothing from 4.5% of its area, except complaints and upset people. And so the focus has been on building up this non-aviation revenue. However, it turns out that even though that means that you don't have to take any money and you can eventually close the airport when you've run out your time, the FAA, the city and the FAA have been litigating about what happens to that excess funds when it closes at the end of 2028. And the FAA's position right now is that you have to give all that money you made from nothing to do with aviation to the FAA when it closes. You have to hand it all over, tens of millions of dollars. So while using it for non-aviation uses gets you out of the cost of the airport, it solves that problem. It gets you into another gotcha of the black hole phenomenon. So you have to stop taking money as soon as possible, and use commercial solutions to get you out of the problem while raising your costs to the aviation community to a reasonable level to cover the cost of aviation.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because that is probably the main argument, is that the city is strapped. We've got a six something million deficit for the city budget this year, and so that's the reason to take the FAA money.
No.
But what you're saying is you're just going down. Not only
That's
is it a black hole, but it's a Faustian bargain because Now you lose any potential from that land in the future.
All future potential is lost. Every time you take that money, you lose the potential. What happened here in Santa Monica is this area has now become what they call Silicon Beach. It's a high-tech area, and tech companies just love funky aviation hangars and those kinds of things. So the city had no problem filling up all of the empty spaces. In fact, Snapchat is now headquartered here and in the adjacent business park. And so again, the revenue stuck in the airport fund, but the city is, when it gets out at the other end of it, it will then have a huge, ability to generate funds that it has never had before. So right now the funds are stopping the losses, and there is still litigation going on between the city and the FAA about whether we really do have to give it all back. But we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind people we're speaking with John Fairweather, one of the lead activists for the Airport Depart movement at Santa Monica. Very similar situation with the Santa Monica Airport. When did the grant assurances run out? Was that 20?
They were supposed to run out in 2015, but when we would have been able to close the airport. But there was the FAA sort of manufactured a, oh, well, you took some money, or you didn't pay back your loan, or on time, or it was something which they maintained started the grant assurances all over again. It was pretty flimsy construct, but when 2015 came around, they said, no,
You're done. Yeah.
you still have to keep going till whenever. So
Well, like I mentioned earlier, we have Western Skyhiker in the studio. Western, fire away.
we do have a couple of questions garnered from the community for you. One of them is around remediation. Had that been discussed, like as far as costs and duration, how long, what would be involved in remediation once the airport closes for some other use?
Well, in our case, as part of the battle in 2014 against the aviation measure, we succeeded in modifying the city charter to say the only thing that can go on the airport if it closes is parkland. And so it's now illegal to do anything else on that land if it is close to aviation. So I'm sorry, I forgot what the
Remediation.
oh, the remediation. So the actual situation in Santa Monica is that the Douglas plant, which was, at one time the largest factory in the world, apparently, it were on the land that it was on, some nasty stuff was happening. But that land actually is not where the airport is now. The airport now is on another piece of land that at the time wasn't associated with the Douglas plant. So it's been covered with tarmac, and so far they're still doing some drilling, and they have found some leakage from drains, but they're not expecting it to be a serious problem as far as remediation. That remediation is been going on for years where the Douglas plant was, and in fact, Boeing Aviation is responsible for dealing with it, not the city.
Yeah, it's because they ended up buying
They
McDonnell
bought Douglas and
Douglas,
inherited the,
which got bought by McDonnell. One of the kind of paradoxes about leaded fuel that the piston engine airplanes are using is that, and airport proponents point to this, they say, well, you can't find it in the soil. and they'll do soil testing, and they typically, it's very low or it's not detectable. Yet if you measure the blood levels of children that live around the airport, it's very much elevated. The amazing Reed Hillview study showed that the kids living south and east of the airport downwind were anywhere from about 3 to 10 micrograms per deciliter, which is going to be a anywhere from a 3 to 10 point drop in lifetime IQ. And was there any, were you ever worried about, or were the activists worried about the lead around the airport?
Yeah, I mean, constantly. There were a number of studies of the similar nature done here, which found exactly the same thing. And so health and pollution was a major focus of a lot of the activists. There were a number of different activist groups, and that was a major focus of a lot of them. We didn't succeed in making any real headway based on the health impacts, because it's very difficult to prove legally, to a legal standard, that actually caused, you know, what happened, even though it morally and plain as you can see, it clearly is the issue. It's difficult to win based on that.
We have about 4 or 5 municipal airports in close proximity, depending how wide you want to cast that radius. And so we're curious as to if there are other airports nearby, Santa Monica, where closing would put aviation businesses or pilots and squeeze them out elsewhere. There's some concerns here, like where the business is going to go. We have small businesses here. Has that come up with you guys?
It's been mentioned. There are a lot of airports, and this is one of the busiest airspaces around in LA. So we have lots of small airports here. So there are lots of places where they could go if they were to leave Santa Monica. So I really don't, you know, see it as a big problem.
So we're not essentially witnessing businesses that have nowhere to go?
Not to my knowledge. There are other airports. Mm-hmm. The issue with Santa Monica is because the houses are right up against the wire fence, basically, around, because of the history of the Douglas plant, and because the whole area was covered with a camouflage netting, and the houses where people live now were the workers' houses that were under that camouflage netting, right next to where the planes were taking off. So it's a crazily close setup that we have here. So
Switching gears a little bit too, I'm sure you're familiar with how national organizations like AOPA advocate heavily in local politics. Were there any tips or anything that you guys could pass on for state level and national level that really try to influence grassroots local efforts? So in other words, you know, we'll have like a poll or a survey and it's just bombarded by, you know.
We had a lot of trouble with that. If you try to do a survey within the city of the population of the city, you will find 10 times that number coming from all over the world, not just nearby, but, you know, America and the other countries piling in. And so that's been a big problem. It means that if you are going to do a survey, you have to use techniques like IP geolocating of the IP addresses of things that people use to take the survey, which there are technologies to do that. And so you need to be able to filter out all that, because it's completely distorts the feedback from the local population.
So, the name of the show is Hemispheres, and it indicates there's some international connection to it. So, I did want to ask about the situation where these older airplanes that make a lot of noise and burn leaded fuel, but they don't do that over in Switzerland or Brussels or Belgium. What was your experience trying to get like mufflers in from Switzerland or Germany, and would any of the flight schools or the FBO consider using the mufflers at the on their airplanes?
So we advocated for installing mufflers on the planes, and the city actually, to its credit, went and identified a manufacturer in Europe of a suitable muffler for the Cessnas, the main planes that are going around, and brought them over and did a installation on one aircraft for one of the flight schools, and we tested the sound levels, which was a dramatic, it was a truly dramatic change in the effect. And the city then offered to pay the costs of putting these mufflers on, or defray the costs, so they didn't really. It was just like if you needed to fix your, silencer or whatever is on there right now, it would cost you nothing, and it would increase the value of your aircraft, but not one aircraft decided to do it. Now, on the use of leaded fuel, that was a very different story. Again, right now the situation in Santa Monica is that all the flight schools use unleaded fuel, completely unleaded aviation fuel. And the reason that that is because the city again offered to pay for them to pass the certification required to use the fuel, paid they had a fuel supply put in, and they paid to make the price of the unleaded fuel the same as the leaded fuel. And so the flight schools in particular have taken that up, and most of the other based aircraft here are now unleaded. So lead is not the same problem it is for the small planes. We still have jets, and we still have some large turboprops that's a different matter.
Yeah.
But the Santa Monica is actually a leader in this country. They have the 100 LL now. So all of the planes, in theory, should be going on unleaded fuel in and out of Santa Monica.
Yeah, I wanted to announce we are speaking with John Fairweather, activist from Santa Monica Airport, talking about how the airport transitioned from FAA control and really into a new dimension in terms of its finances and the health of the neighbors that lived around there. I think we are going to open up the lines to the telephone 303-442-4242, or you can email in a question or comment at dj@kgnu.org. So that number again is 303-442-4242. I seem to remember that I thought they had fit one of the sheriff's planes with a sound suppression system, And it actually was quieter than the choppers that they were using, and they were able to do better surveillance. Did you tell me that a couple of years ago, or?
I heard about that, but the plane that the city fitted was a plane from Justice Aviation, which is one of the flight schools. I don't personally know about the police aircraft, although I have heard that. Yeah.
And so Justice Aviation was, or is, the FBO, or did they leave?
But they're the largest flight school.
Okay. And they did not maintain that muffled airplane? Did they convert it back, or did they?
They were one of the flight schools that shut down operations around 2015. Yeah. They've gone completely. They're a new flight school, sort of moved in now, but they've gone.
And that was because they didn't want to be restricted in their operations?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the
okay. But had they obeyed the stop the pattern flying and the burn the unleaded fuel, they probably could have remained there. Is that
sure? Correct? Yeah. They just didn't want to, I guess. I don't know.
I actually have a couple of resources I'd like to announce. These are websites that are a wealth of information, the first one being airportneighborhoodcampaign.org, and the second one is SaveOurSkiesAlliance.org. Both are heavily fact-driven resources, with Save Our Skies being a little bit broader, whereas Airport Neighborhood Campaign is more focused on the city of Boulder. So I encourage people to check out both of those websites for a lot of information.
Hey, John, maybe you can talk a little bit how the AOPA funded the ballot measure to take control of, to have the FAA take control of the airport. How did that play out, and how did the activists react to that?
Well, that was in 2014 election. The AOPA crafted a ballot measure which essentially took all control away from the city. And the first we heard of it was when they started getting professional signature gatherers to gather the necessary signatures to get it on the ballot. And so at that point, we activated to oppose the signature gatherers, which we ran from my house. But that was very successful, and we finished up forcing them. What we do is we just go and stand next to them, and we had sort of people all through the city call in and tell us, there's one of those signature gatherers, he's standing outside this supermarket, and we'd be there in 5 minutes, and then we'd stand next to him with a please don't sign the deceptive thing, and that would be the last signature they'd get. So that drove the price per signature up to well over $20 a signature. They had to pay these, which started a gold rush of signature gatherers from all over the country coming in to get $20 a signature. So we had to deal with that. And in the end, it must have cost them an awful lot, but they finally got the signatures. And so then we formed the city council came and asked us to form a ballot committee to oppose this measure, because the council isn't allowed to do it themselves. So our condition for doing that was, having fought the signature gatherers just before, was to, as I say, modify the city charter to say it's a park. If we're going to fight it, that's our requirement. And That was a lengthy discussion with the city council, obviously, and but in the end, that was the agreement, and so we then were fighting the National Aviation Lobby, and they had their average donation was, you know, in the thousands, because they were coming from big donors. And ours was in the $30 range. So they substantially out fundraises. They spent about $1.25 million plus whatever it cost them for the signature gatherers on that fight that year, which was more than was spent on every other measure on the ballot and every other candidate put together.
Well, we have our first caller tonight. Let's go to Joe. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for this program. It seems like in the Santa Monica experience and probably here too in Boulder County, the airport, the FAA is a formidable opponent due to some real structural advantages they have legally, structurally down the line, even after the airport has moved with land rights, et cetera. That said, I wonder how other countries have anything equivalent to their FAA and whether those countries have things we can learn locally, or even how a new FAA here might work modeled after some other land.
Well, thanks, Joe.
I don't know if there's an equivalent to the FAA. I think it's going to be pretty difficult to convince the federal government to change the ground rules for the FAA, because there are a lot of. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the aviation, at least the general aviation industry, is in decline and has been for decade or two now. And, you know, with drones and vertical takeoff aircraft and all kinds of things, the question remains, does a general aviation airport make any sense 10 years from now? And I think the answer is probably not in a lot of cases. Commercial aviation, that's something else. But I think the FAA is aware that there's going to be an ever increasing push for the repurposing of underutilized land that's tied up in FAA grant assurances. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because as the industry declines and the need for the airport goes away, because these new mechanisms won't need an airport. It'd be interesting to see how long it takes before that power that they have starts to get reduced. But I think it eventually has to happen, but it may take a while.
You had actually just kind of touched on this, because here in the city of Boulder, there's a lot of chatter about what the future of the airport would look like as an airport. So uses in particular eVTOL and, you know, transportation of people on that level, has that come up as a concern with you guys, or do you know otherwise, like, are they going to use resources other than airports actually for this future? Okay.
So the situation right now, as I understand it with the eVTOLs, is that the FAA, you know, the FAA moves very, very slowly. And obviously for eVTOLs to make any sense, they need to be able to land on the roofs of buildings and close to the final mile. They don't really make any sense as a transport mechanism replacing aircraft, because they use a lot more energy for the same amount of, people transported. But their main advantage is the final mile. So The FAA right now requires that they be in an airport, but that is being studied and likely to change soon because it basically makes them impractical and not economically feasible if you force that requirement. So I think that will change, and then and again, that's all just part of the changing landscape of small aviation in this country.
Yeah, we don't know what we don't know.
So we do have an email. It's not a question, but it's, don't buy a house near an airport if planes are something that bothers you. But have you had many why'd you move next to an airport statements thrown your way?
Yeah, that's the one that all everybody always starts with. It's amazing that they still say that. But of course, that's, let me think of a well. Let me think of an analogy. If you there was a research building next to you, and they were doing research, and it was fine, and you were living next to them. And then you discovered later that they were doing research into radioactive and thermonuclear weapons or something. And they, had a couple of little little leaks. The question then is, well, you knew they were doing research there. How can you complain that they are doing research? Well, it's because something fundamental has changed. In the case of Santa Monica, what fundamentally changed was the scale of things. It just the flights went through the roof, and the jets moved in, which we hadn't had before, and so that just changed the ground rules completely. And so the argument has validity if nothing changes. But like all arguments, when things change, you have to reevaluate the priorities and decide which one has to go. And just because something was there before, and it doesn't mean they have to stay. And in the case of Santa Monica, as I said before, in fact, it was a park before it was seized and turned into an airport by the federal government. So by that argument, the people have been here on using that land for a park a lot longer than the airplanes have, so they should go.
I'm curious, back to like politics here, if you guys had any state or federal elected official support, and if you did, what did that look like? And if you did or didn't, do you feel like that was a big deal for your outcome?
Not during the main fight, we really didn't have state or federal support. We not actively. I mean, we had people that were kind of encouraging and things, but it was really pretty much resolved at the city level. It was Santa Monica essentially had to go it alone. In our case,
So this was a really city citizen driven
yeah,
effort, much like ours right now.
That number again is 303-442-4242. We're talking with John Fairweather from Santa Monica. And as we're getting ready to kind of close up, I kind of think about the little town of Valmont, which is east of the airport, which existed. Probably the first houses were built out there in the 1840s, and the last houses were built in the 1920s. And they get the brunt of the Eastern flying airplanes at an airport that was built after that community was already there. But I haven't heard one of them say, well, we shouldn't have put an airport here that's flying over an existing airport. And I think that kind of goes along with what you were saying earlier.
It's just
And but one thing I wanted to get at was, I remember I was looking at your website a few months ago, and I thought that that some staff members were trying to write 30-year leases for some aviation companies trying to expand or extend the airport. Did that show up?
No. Maybe a long time back, but not recently. No, okay. Everybody knows that every lease at the airport expires at the end of 2028, regardless.
Okay. And what's your relationship with the airport manager? Is he on with the closure? Or
he's very helpful and supportive, and I think he is largely responsible for how open and you know, visible operations at the airport are now, and that is so important, because unless you can know what's going on, you can't, you know, do anything about it.
Yeah.
So a reminder of two of our websites, airportneighborhoodcampaign.org and SaveOurSkiesAlliance.org, for more information.
I think one of the areas that is has really been important is the leaded fuel problem that we talked about a little bit earlier. You know, the Reed Hillview study, and then Dr. Bruce Lanphier came up with a part of another epidemiological study about heart disease linked to lead exposure. And it tracks the lead levels in both the U.S. and the U.K. And there's a few blips there where it goes up when they allowed lead back into the automotive system for a while. But one of the major differences is that the size distribution on aviation combustion products is about one-fifth the size, the median size, about one-fifth that of automotive combustion. And the particles can go through the lung barrier much faster and much more profoundly. And these are the areas that are right around the airport are San Lazaro and Monte Vista, are two of the large trailer homes communities right next to the airport. And, you know, their kids are probably in the 1 to 5 micrograms per deciliter. Was there a formal testing program that for lead in Santa Monica for children? Not a formal, but Eva, was there somewhere where people could go?
There were testing programs, and they did show those kinds of increases. But I think the leaded fuel problem is something that if you handle it right, can be done. We managed to do it in Santa Monica. The city does it right and helps a solution. It's very embarrassing. It may not be legally effective, but it's incredibly embarrassing to put someone in the position of saying, well, I don't care if I may be killing off children. I like lead. It's, you know. And so as long as you remove the barriers to them saying, well, I don't have any choice, and those barriers have now been removed, there is 100 LL, and the only argument left is the cost of getting certified to go on it, and that's a one-off cost. And if the city can cover that, then the only other thing is the price of the fuel is somewhat higher, and that's going to come down when there's more of it in use. But again, that can be subsidized away. And what we found was when you get the first flight school to go over, the rest are all just embarrassed and they have no choice. They all go over, and then everyone else in the airport is embarrassed, and so I think that is a problem that can be.
John, we're going to have to wrap it up. Okay. We've come to the end of the hour. John Fairweather from Santa Monica Port. Stay tuned for Cabaret Green.
You are tuned into KGNU FM 88.5 Boulder, KGNU 1390 Denver, and it's the top of the hour here at the Boulder Studios, and we are honored to welcome to the cabaret Derek, whatever, no, go ahead and introduce yourself to to the community, Derek.
Hi, my name's Derek Damesoll.
There you are. And you are tuned in to Cabaret. We're live here for the next hour.
Yeah.
Take it away.
All right.
First time I met you, girl, I should have walked. Used to being lonely, and why should I stop? She had sleek blonde hair, drove a Cadillac, and she made all her money as an acrobat. Wasn't 2 days or three before she sat in my lap, and she asked about my salary and then started to laugh. I tried to feel sorry, but she had picked me. In the right light I shine, in the rest I look mean. Lord, I wish you just left me on Sugarloaf Hill, where the birds sang my chorus and the wind kept me still. I'm sad enough to cry, just to chuckle and grin, over love lost or not, oh, that old who said.